Ray Ferraro, former NHLer, now analyst on TSN, who probably at some point wanted to be a rock star as well, joins us now. Ray, how you doing?
Good. I didn't want to be a rock star. I wanted to be a baseball player.
A baseball player. Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, why baseball over hockey?
I don't know. I just loved it. It was actually my favorite sport when I was younger, and I was from Trail, BC, which has a long history of pretty successful baseball teams at the Little League level. I played in the Little League World Series, and which was to this day one of the highlights of my life. And I was a Red Sox fan, and I got to a point where I was kind of quasi thinking about it. And then I realized all the kids in California and such played 12 months of the year, and our 4-month season was putting me 8 months behind every year.
Fair enough. Okay. Now, when you played ball, what position were you?
Second base and shortstop. I could hit, and I could really run. And, I think I was, some of the aggressiveness of hockey transferred very well to the way I played baseball, and I just loved it. I love the sport, and I played as long as I could. And actually, the last pitch I faced in a competitive baseball game was my first year of pro. I came back, and I was just playing in a senior league, and a guy hit me in the face with a fastball, and that was the end of my baseball career.
Now, in all of your times as a hockey player, a lot of times guys had the luxury, maybe every now and then, getting to go take BP at a major league park. Did you ever get that?
No, never did that. Got on the field in Atlanta a few times and stood out in the bullpen and watched a couple of their starters. That was the era of Smoltz and Millwood and Glavin and Maddox, and watched them throw bullpen sessions from about 3 feet away. And I'm telling you, I would have loved to have swung the bat at batting practice, but watching those guys work was amazing. The sound the ball makes coming out of their hand was unlike what I was facing in whatever level I was playing, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. Any elite-level athlete in any sport, I think people, when you get to be up close, whether it's hockey or football, you really appreciate it. At times, television doesn't do justice just how skilled they are.
No, it doesn't for sure. And, so I had in my head what a major league pitcher must look like because I played baseball. And then when I saw one up close, I went, well, that's not what I was thinking. And I think that's probably common about anybody that plays, whether it's plays hockey growing up or plays baseball or played football or played soccer. You have an idea or a feel, but you don't really understand how fast and how exceptional the very best are. So even a player that people think isn't very good, if you're watching him on TV, I get news for you. He's probably pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Ridiculous good. Like, I've always thought, hitting a curveball, breaking ball at the major league level, for just one specific skill set, it's got to be one of the hardest things to do.
Well, it would be a hell of a lot easier if you knew it was coming.
Yeah, sure.
And therein lies the challenge. Everything looks the same coming out of their hand, and now you look at these guys, they throw, upper 90s in with their fastballs, and their off-speed pitches are faster than anything we've ever seen. That's their off-speed pitch. And then, you get some guy that slings in a high 70s changeup, and, there's 20 miles an hour between the fastball and the changeup. You don't have a chance.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. Ray, I wanted to get into some stuff because we know, the order game last night, Todd McClellan pulled no punches after the game. I actually thought he controlled himself better because I could tell he was freaking furious after that game. And, coaches rarely call out a player. He said, hey, Schultz's game's disappointing. Didn't say anything that wasn't true. And you know, he's playing him a lot of minutes because, you know, scouts are in there. They're trying to see, you know, scouts want to see him at this point of the year. That's just the harsh reality of it. But he said, because Justin Schultz is one player, but more of what McClellan said about this team, just, you know what, he's worried about the spirit of the group that at times, you know, basically saying, hey, it looks like there are a bunch of guys who take the easy way out too often. And when I asked him, how do you get rid of that? He says, well, maybe we've got to get rid of players. Like, it seems like finally a major shakeup's coming and the onus isn't always going to be pointed at the coach, which has been the case for the last few years.
Well, it's long overdue. You know, I think this group of players has had more than enough chances, Jason, to head a little bit of a turnaround here. And, you know, the fact of the matter is you're sitting in the position you are if you're the Oilers, and you can't help but look at every single piece on your team. And so the players who, you know, you still get in your head that they're young, and they are, but they've been in the league for 6 and 7 years. And if they can't be part of the turnaround, then, you know, you keep hearing, oh, we want to change the culture, but they are the culture. Because they are the players. They are the senior players on this team. They're the most skilled players, the most highly regarded players. And maybe, not maybe, it is time to change course. And it doesn't matter if this is year 3, 4, 8, or 10 of a rebuild. It's really year one for Peter Chiarelli and Todd McClellan. And as much as that's tough for a fan who's been going to the games year after year to stomach, that's really the fact of the matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter, but it doesn't matter in Peter Chiarelli's world that a decision was made 3 years ago or 4 years ago to draft a certain player or to trade a certain player. He can't worry about that. That's for me and you and talk show guys and fans to debate over a beer. But for him, it's the now. And the now is they're not very good. And they give you this tease of promise every once in a while, but it's just not good enough. And they know it's not. And I thought last night when I was listening to those comments from Todd, my first thought was, I can't believe it took this long. Yeah. You know, like he's tried to be super patient, and they've really tried to evaluate, you know, on an eyeball test, you know, not – because you hear lots of things when you're in, you know, when Todd's coaching San Jose, he sees Edmonton, you know, whatever it was, 4 or 5 times a year, but he doesn't see the guys every day at practice. He doesn't see them play, you know, 60 games or whatever. I guess they're close to 60 games right now. He doesn't have that luxury because you're coaching somebody else. Well, now they've been through this ringer. And, you know, so I'm doing games a lot of the times in Toronto. Well, Toronto was very clear last year that they were ripping it right down to the bones. And in Edmonton, the thought was that they were always so much further ahead of that because of some of the talented players they have. And while they are ahead of it because some of these guys are in the NHL, they clearly have to change course because this just isn't – it's just not – you can't continue like this.
No, gosh. The definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing and expect different results. Yeah, eventually, you know, they got to make major changes. And, you know, most of those major changes will come in the offseason. Now, I do have one for you. Let's say they can't trade Justin Schultz. It's obvious, you know, Peter Chiarelli said he's a seller. Todd McClellan, everybody knows they're going to try to trade him. Scouts are in town watching him. If a deal doesn't come by Monday at 1 o'clock Edmonton time, is it better for the Oilers to just healthy scratch Schultz, or do you think it's even better then to just put him in the minors to see if they're out of the spot, like he can find his game? Because I think, Ray, being a former player, trying to rediscover your confidence at the NHL level, excruciatingly difficult.
Well, I don't think they can just put him in the minors. They got to clear waivers.
Yeah, well, sure. Well, but he's not coming back anyway, right? So does it matter if he gets picked up on waivers?
Oh. I don't know. Why wouldn't you just – you've still got his rights until July 1st. Why wouldn't you hold on till right near the draft and maybe you can make him part of a bigger deal that, you know, a team can say, hey, look, I'm going to have till July 1st to sign him. Of course, a restricted free agent, they've got I think there's a minimum that his pay can be cut. So that would certainly be a major hindrance to signing Schultz. You know, I mean, I'm not paying him $3 million next year if I think he's a project. You know, which I think they can cut him to 3.3, I believe I read. But that would be, you know, I'm not going to acquire him if I've got to do that.
No,
you know,
I...
And so maybe that's why they can get a minimal return at the deadline here, because somebody will say, okay, let's take a look at what he can do for 20 games, and that, knowing that they would RFA qualify him at, you know, at the minimum they can, at the clawback that they can onto his salary. That's really the only way I can see him being moved. But to your point about sending him to the minors, it would only be if you want to get a look at some other guys for the last 20 games. I guess that would be really the only reasoning to that.
Well, I guess I should have followed it up. When you have a player that's like, you watched last night, and Todd McClellan's comments of his individual play impacted the team, that's where I looked at sometimes is, you know, addition by subtraction, not having him around, not having him on the ice where he's making those plays where it's a 2-1 game and it's close. And then it's a simple play where, to me, I just no confidence. He can't even accept a cross ice pass right that's basically on his stick, right? Like, that's not even necessarily an effort play. That's just a everything is wrong type of play where, you know, that's that play where it totally just deflates your team. Maybe it's too risky to even have that around.
Well, there's no more risk in Edmonton. I mean, where's the risk? You're not getting into the playoffs.
No, but isn't it a risk? Like, if you never gain any traction and you just play out the string again, when is the team ever going to learn the building blocks to win?
Well, that's coming. I mean, that was pretty obvious in the last 2 days, wasn't it? Like, you know, when are they ever going to learn? They're going to learn by turning the page on not just Justin Schultz, but on a couple other players that, of course, they'll get far bigger returns on. I mean, that's just what has to happen. I can't even think of a player, you know, as you were talking, Jason, I was trying to think of somebody that I played with that all of a sudden, you know, just everything just vanished on them. Like, I don't think Justin Schultz is a Norris Trophy defenseman, but he's not this bad. I mean, like, he can't even make a play anymore. And you used to be able to balance the plays with the defensive mistakes or the lack of defensive firmness and say, yeah, you know, you can balance one with the other and maybe he'll learn to play a little bit more stout defense. But right now, you know, you alluded to the pass that he couldn't catch yesterday. I mean, it's like it's all gone for him.
Yep.
I don't know how you get it back if you come into the same dressing room all the time, the same rink all the time. You know, he clearly needs a fresh start. Will he ever get it back? I don't know. I mean, it's not like he can just say, okay, I'm just going to be a safe stay-at-home defenseman. That's not his game. That, you know, and the other thing is alongside a confidence for him, I mean, the real question for me has always been his ability to read the scene in the defensive zone. You know, like, is he going to be able to pick out where the most dangerous guy is and get to a spot where he can defend the most dangerous guy? That's always been somewhat of a liability in my eyes when I watch him play, and that's not going to change necessarily city to city.
Ray Farrar from TSN joins us. Now, it's a million-dollar question. Can he rediscover it? Because I think when you're not making those plays, like, you don't get to the NHL not being able to catch a pass. Like, Schultz obviously has some skill. His confidence is clearly gone. I don't think he'll ever rediscover it in Edmonton. Maybe he can somewhere else. And that's, I'm assuming that's why there still might be a team willing to take a chance on him, because they think, hey, there was a player there. You can't have that much skill and just evaporate. But the risk is, and that's why the return won't be high, that, well, maybe he never gets it back. But some team is likely to say, well, maybe he will. And because I think, Ray, whoever trades for him, I don't even think they qualify him, even at the 3.3s, because you just say to him, hey, Justin, you come here, maybe you're feeling better. We'll re-sign you as a UFA, but we're only paying you $2 million, for instance.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a conversation for down the road. What happens if he goes to a new place, to a team that's looking for somebody to play on the power play, and he puts up 15 points in the last 20 games?
Come on.
Like, gets to a team that's got a really good power play.
Well, I could grow hair back, Ray, but I think it's highly unlikely.
Teams get tricked all the time, Jason.
Yeah.
You know, like okay, so he's a major part of that power play, or at least was for a long time, and the power play's not been very good either. I mean, there's been this fallacy around the Oilers that for years that, oh, this is a high-scoring team. You guys know. You read the stats. That team doesn't score, and he's got a portion to that. What if he goes to a place and he finds it? I don't think it's likely, but it's not totally unlikely. As far as next year, whoever acquires him, if that's indeed what happens, man, they're not even thinking of that. They'll talk to him in June when everything's just play. Come here and play. Here's our new system that you got to try and figure out. And, you know, you'll be playing on a third pair wherever he goes. That's what likely is, you know, would be his, you know, his level. If he's even at that level, maybe he becomes a depth guy. If they're trading a late round draft pick, I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be a very high pick.
No.
You know, maybe you get a different prospect, like not an A prospect, but a, you know, a B prospect. Maybe that's what they can get for him, because at this point, clearly he's not coming back. So you might as well get what you can.
One last one for you, Ray. We are 5 days away from a trade deadline. I read an interesting story on ESPN there, and I know you were involved talking about how you found out from trades, and then the one time you heard from your new GM before you heard from your current GM. So that was that was interesting back in the day with no cell phone, so you left a message. You look at teams like Washington right now is the best team in the league. I don't think there's any debate. Whether they be the best in the playoffs, who knows? The Anaheim Ducks are absolutely rolling. But I look, Mike Santarelli's a right winger with Getzlaff. I don't see that a great fit. And Nick Ritchie's not playing great on their second line. There's a team with tons of cap space. Is Andrew Ladd the guy you think they go after? Is it Teddy Purcell? What type of winger do you think they're going to try to get between now and the deadline? Because they got tons of cap space.
The guy that jumps out at me is Louis Erickson in Boston, who's having a fantastic year. He's a versatile player. Not that they need any help killing penalties. They've got the best penalty killing in the league, but he's an excellent penalty killer. He scores, he plays like in Boston, he plays the net front on their first power play. So you can easily imagine him on the second power play in Anaheim, because of course the first one is where Corey Perry camps out. Erickson is a guy to me. Andrew Ladd will be well sought after. And what Anaheim has, and they have in spades, is young defensemen. And a tough sign for them in both Sammy Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm. Now, would they tinker with their team now, or would they be looking to move one of the younger guys that isn't quite in the NHL yet? You know, like a guy like Shea Theodore. Would they move Shea Theodore? I mean, it's really an embarrassment of riches on the blue line for Anaheim, and you're right. They probably do need another winger. Don't forget Chris Stewart, who had played really well before he broke his jaw in a fight. He's going to be back in, you know, probably 3 to 4 weeks as well. So if they get a forward and then they get Stewart back, man, you've added two players for the price of one.
Yeah, Stewart's one of those guys that just always seems you're leaving wanting more.
And this year is, for whatever reason, when Anaheim started to turn it around, that's when they split up Getzlaff and Perry, and Stewart started playing on the right side of Getzlaff. I'm with you. Every time I watch him, I remember a game back in Edmonton, and Stewart was with Colorado at the time, and it was right before the Olympics, like a year before, and he was playing well enough that he was in kind of the outsides of the conversation of, hey, could this guy push his way onto the Olympic team? And for just as you said, he leaves you wanting more a lot of times, but this year he's been, and certainly right before he got hurt in the month before, he had played very well for them. They were very happy with him.
Well, Ray, it should be an interesting one. There's a lot of big names. Louis Erickson, I think Andrew Ladd's going to have a lot. I'm really curious what Carolina does. They're close enough. I don't think they give up on Eric Staal before the deadline, even though he's a pending UFA. But maybe they do.
I think they do.
You think they do?
I think they do. I think they're crazy if they don't.
Okay.
Because if you can get a return on Eric Staal that you really like, you can always re-sign him in the summer if he wants to come back. Don't forget, he's also making $8.25 million.
Oh, it's big. But he also has a no-movement clause, so he has to agree to it.
Yeah, well, he also said last week in Ottawa he wouldn't be heartbroken if he had to move on.
So oh, okay.
It's almost like he's preparing himself to be moved. You know, sometimes you talk yourself into saying, okay, just in case, I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
But I would be more surprised than less surprised if they don't move him.
So he's not going to Matt Sundin it, is what you're saying?
I would be surprised.
Okay. Well,
I really would.
Well, that's another huge name.
And I would be surprised. I would be surprised if Ron Francis, who is I've known Ronnie for a long time. He's really thoughtful. He's really cautious. He's very thorough. It would really, really surprise me if he's not exploring every option. Even though, quite surprisingly, they're you know, they've been one of the real surprises along with New Jersey in the league this year.
One last one quickly for you, Ray. Is there any name no one's talked about you think possibly could be on the move?
Oh, boy. I wish I knew this in advance or, you know, or had a let me just you know what, anytime you come up, or I come up with a name, I think, you know, somebody is, you know, somebody's talked about him in some form or not. And then nobody that's out of the ordinary, I don't think there's going to be any stunner. Just like Shirelli said yesterday, the time for the big moves, those are in the draft. Yeah. What did he call it? A global vision.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a pretty good quote, actually. I didn't realize the hockey team had a global vision, but maybe that's why I'm broadcasting and not managing.
Well, we'll have lots to talk about, Ray, the deadline, and also the each team will be announcing their 16 players next Tuesday for the World Cup.
Oh, wow. We got a lot to do on Wednesday.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Have a good week.
We'll talk to you then, Jason. See
you. Ray Ferraro from TSN.